So in this text, which is starts with student asking the teacher for the highest knowledge, and the teacher says the knowledge can be obtained by faith, devotion, and by meditation. So the technique of meditation we have studied in this book, and all of you, I know, are meditating on a regular basis. And for the last 2 weeks, we have been meditating on the formless Brahman. So that's up here. Brahman is the substratum of this universe, the total origin of the universe. Just as the ocean is the substratum for all waves, bubbles, froth, whirlpools, currents. So similarly, Brahman is the support. Just as all waves arise and merge back into the ocean, so all of us, the whole, not only us, but the whole universe, the earth, the planets, the stars, even the distant galaxies, even space, all originated in that formless Brahman, which is said to be the God or the source of the universe. There are 13 pointers about this Brahman that are indicated in verse number 6. Some of them have been done, so we won't repeat it. But if you like, we can chant the verse. You can repeat after me, page 30, verse number 6. Achintyam, avyaktam, anantarupam, shivam, prashantam, amritam, brahmayonim, tathadi madhyantavihinam, ekam, vibhum, chidanandam, arupam, adbhutam. Okay, so the first few were covered. Achintya means cannot be thought of. We have already done that. Avyaktam is unmanifest. Last week, Neeru did the other ones. Anantarupam, of endless forms. All forms are him. Shivam, auspicious. Prashantam, very peaceful, totally peaceful. And Amritam, immortal. That was covered last week. I think she talked briefly about Brahma Yonim, the origin of the creator. Now we think that God is the creator. So how can this formless be the origin of the creator of the universe? Right? I think that they asked her last week. So the way this is explained, vasanas, the V there, vasanas is the, vasanas has two meanings, has many meanings. One is it is the tendencies or habits. But vasana is also the creative force that decides what I do. So vasana is the creative urge. Vasana is the creative urge. Let us explain that. Now today you had the desire to learn about meditation. That's why you all came, and I had the desire to speak about it. So this today, this world of meditation that we are all in, is because we had this vasana, this desire, this tendency, this creative urge. Like an alcoholic, what kind of world does he create? Who has a vasana, a desire to drink, what does he do? Associate with other alcoholics. Right? They meet together and they drink, they meet in a bar and they all hang out. And who are his friends? Alcoholics. So his world, he creates a world of alcoholics. Now a doctor, now what kind of world is his? His world is from home. He or she will go to the clinic, from the clinic to the hospital, hospital to home. So the doctor's world is only the world of medicine. You know, where they see sick patients. A healthy person is not going to go see a doctor. Usually it will be somebody sick. And then whom will the doctor associate with? Other doctors, right? They socialize with other doctors. They'll go to a conference, you know, to Los Angeles or San Diego. Will he go to a conference of plumbers or welders or accountants? No, he'll go to a conference for physicians, for doctors. So he creates a world of medicine, an accountant. He creates a world of numbers, dealing with numbers and taxes and, you know, all that. So vasanas are our creative urge, which we create our own world based on our tendencies. Is that clear to everybody? So my vasanas, when combined with all the vasanas of the entire universe, my creative urge, and vasanas means the creative tendency. Here we do not take it as a bad habit, but as a creative tendency. So my creative tendencies combined with all creative tendencies of all beings, animals, birds, plants, fish. Birds also have a, you know, tendency, they create a nest. Plants have a tendency, they want to grow and create fruits. So that is their tendency, that is their, you know, their world. Plants associate with other, in the sense, they grow like in a forest, all trees grow together, all plants grow together, you know what I'm saying. So the total creative urge of the entire universe, all the, not only this world, but all the worlds put together, is personified in our scriptures as Brahmaji, the creator. Brahmaji, the creator, not the total Brahman, not the total formless, but the creator who creates this whole universe. So they say there is a creator called Brahmaji, who is the sum total of all the creativity of the whole world is put together in him, in that one being. And where does that being come? That also comes from the formless Brahman. So from the formless support comes this creator. Is that clear to everybody, or anybody has any doubts? That's why Brahmaji in our scriptures is shown as coming from the Nabhi of Vishnu. You know, those of our Hindus know that. What it means is that the creator also originates from the substratum, from the support. So that's why it is said to be the origin of the creator. Then, this is a little difficult concept. I hope I was able to explain it to everybody.
It's very confusing.
Why is that? What is confusing?
Brahmaji is creator, but he is created by...
by that consciousness, the Brahman. That Brahman, the total consciousness, functioning through all the creative urges, becomes Brahmaji, the creator. So he takes the form of... he takes the form of, like, you know, this Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. You know, the creator, sustainer, destroyer. All forms originate from the formless. From the formless emerges Mother Saraswati and Mother Lakshmi and Mother Durga. They are all manifestations of that one. That one consciousness manifests as all these gods and goddesses. Also manifests as Jesus, as Buddha, as Allah. Allah is, of course, Allah is the formless. Allah is the formless because the Christian and Muslims don't worship form. So Allah is formless, but any form that you see, any form, any, whether it's Buddha or whether it's Mahavir or whether it's Jesus or whether it is Mother Mary or whether it is Krishna or Shiva, they all are manifestation of that one formless. So if you put it as that, so the Brahmaji is also a manifestation, but I was trying to give it as the creative urge. But if you just think of Brahmaji as a god, the creator, then that also came from that. Okay. Then it is without beginning, middle and end. It is endless. And, you know, all the scriptures say that God alone was. And he was there before even the world came into existence, right? And then the Bible says he created the world in 6 days and the seventh day he rested. We also believe that there is this formless Brahman who was there before. Before time, even when time was not there, there was not even a concept of time, creator was there. Not only it is without beginning, middle and end in time, but also in space. That means it extends beyond space. So there is no place where God began, no place in the middle, and no place where it ends. You can't say, okay, at this point, God ends. No, it's infinite. It goes on and on and on and on in space. And also in time. That means even before time came into creation, God was there. Now, in this book, Swami Chinmayananda explains, these concepts are a little difficult, need some thinking. And it's okay if it's not clear, we can go over again. But time is a concept of the intellect. Like when I'm in deep sleep, I sleep for 7 hours at night or 8 hours or 6 hours. Do I have any idea of time? I go to sleep at 10 o'clock and I wake up at, say, 5 or 6. I don't know where the time passed. It's not that. So I'm in deep sleep or somebody is under anesthesia. You know, he may have had surgery for 4 or 5 hours. But he thinks, oh, I just went to sleep and the surgery is already over. So a person in deep sleep has no concept of time. Also, time is a concept of thought. It is something I think of. Let me give an example. Now, suppose there are 4 people or 5 people playing poker. They are playing poker, and so they sit at 9 o'clock in the evening after dinner. And all they are thinking of is hearts, diamonds, spades, clubs, 1, 2, 3. They are only looking at those 52 cards. And they are so engrossed that somebody says, oh, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. The sun is... Oh my God, 9 hours passed, we didn't even know. Why? Because they had one thought, 52 cards. So they're thinking only about 52 cards. So time passes very fast for them, right? Because A, they are enjoying the game, and B, they are single-pointed, one single thought. But suppose there is a lady whose son is sick, and she has to stay up all night to give him medicine every 2 hours. The doctor says, check his fever. A little baby is sick and make sure the temperature doesn't go above 100. And if it goes above 100, give him Tylenol. Now that mother is staying up for 8 or 9 hours, how hard it is for her to pass the time. Every minute is difficult, right? Or a man who lost his job and couldn't sleep. Now for him, those 8 and 9 hours are punishment. He says, when will the morning come? When will the morning come so I can look at the paper and look for a job or the mother... So a person who has one thought, only cards, for them 9 hours passes just like that. So we didn't even know it's already morning. Or a person in meditation, when a person goes into deep meditation, these yogis and all, when they sit for meditation, they have one thought, that is, I am that, I am that. In that one thought, their mind becomes so still. And they can stay for hours in meditation. In our scriptures, they even describe people staying for months and years in meditation in one place, not moving. And their metabolism slows down so much, they even don't need to eat or drink. They can stay for months or years. So when that mind is still, then there is the time passes very fast, right? Is that clear? That concept of time becomes... very rapid when the mind is still. The time passes. But if the mind is agitated, or that mother whose child is sick, or that man who doesn't have a job, for him time moves very slow, right? So for one, the time moved very fast, and for another one, the time moved very slowly. So, or in deep sleep, the time moves very fast. You don't know how 8 hours passed. So the point is that time is a function of the intellect. Of thinking. It's how you think that decides time. Time is not absolute. Of course, hours, minutes, and seconds are there, but your time may be different from her time. If your mind is peaceful, you have a good night's sleep, you didn't even notice, but if her mind is disturbed and she woke up every hour, then time, so the same time, one becomes difficult and one becomes rapid. Is that clear to everybody? So this consciousness was there even before there was any intellect. There was no thinkers. There was not even the gods and goddesses. There was not even animals, birds, plants, fish, humans. Nothing was there but that formless Brahman alone was. So that's why it is said it is to be there before time. And when the universe ends, when there is no other beings alive, nobody to think, then time also ends. Right? Then there is no time. Time is a concept of intellect. When people are around, then there is time, and there is nobody around, then the time stops. There is no time. There is no, it's not then from 2000 and suppose 2050 or 2060, the world ends, and the, or maybe in a billion years, all the universe ends. then there is nothing time. It's not that the calendar will keep on moving. There is no calendars. There is no time. Is that clear? Or people are still confused? You're still confused?
It's not imagination.
Right. But the point is that it is never ends. Okay, if you forget about the intellect, and I'll just say that it was there before the world came into creation, it is there now, it will be there when the world ends. That is simple. Then you don't have to worry about the concept of time. But time is a very interesting concept, which I want you to think about what we are saying. And you can read about it in the book also. So the point is that it is there, and also in space, right? Space is endless, but this is even beyond space. There is no place where God is not. It was there, it keeps going on and on and on in the beginning and on and on in the end. It is endless, never ends. So just take it as endless. Without beginning, middle and end means it is endless. It is beyond space, it is beyond time, it is beyond the world. Talking about endless, you know, football season, you know, women think that, you know, the season will never end, because there was this lady whose husband, Saturday all day he would be watching college football, Sunday he would be watching NFL, now there are games on Mondays, there are games on Thursdays, and then during the week he's doing fantasy. So she thinks this football season will never end, you know, it's endless, and goes on and on for months, you know, and then even the off season he's thinking about, you know, different teams. And so this Sunday, he was watching football, and he got up in the middle in halftime to get a beer. That's the only time they get up from the TV, either to get a beer or to go to the bathroom. Otherwise, they are glued. So he gets up to get a beer, and the wife was reading the paper. And she says, you know, I read in the classified that a man is willing to swap his wife, exchange his wife for a season ticket. You know, for a football season ticket, he's willing to exchange his wife, swap his wife. Isn't that terrible? So husband keeps quiet. So she says, will you swap me for a season football ticket? He says, of course not. The season is already half over. I wouldn't. So that is endless, where, you know, for months on end, the person is only thinking football. Then the other one is one. That means it is one without a second. What it means is that we are all nothing but our expressions of that one. That one is, even though it looks like many, but they are all expressions of that one, just as mud is one, right? The earth is one. Now, from this mud, you create different parts, a yellow part, a green part, a cup, a saucer, a plate, a vase, flower vase. Now, suppose this cup and saucer and glass go into space, right? It is sent into space in a space station. So in the rocket, it goes to the space station. Now, that cup and saucer is no longer on Earth, but it is still mud, right? That same mud, which is expressing in all the parts, is also expressing in that part that is in the space station, right? The one earth, the one mud expresses in all the parts. So similarly, that one God expresses in all of us as all the beings, even the plants, the birds, the animals, the fish, even the earth, everything is that one. So the idea being that I and this whole universe is an expression of that. You know, we were talking about, I think somebody said, how can I be God? You know, you don't have to say, I am God. You say, God is me. God is everything, so he's also me. Everything, the chair is God, and she's God, and the floor is God, the cup is God. Everything is that one. That one, everything emerged. So what that does is it creates respect. I respect everybody as expressions of God, as just as I am, and we are all one. So that oneness is, that is expressed in one. Is that clear? That is clear, right? That is easy. Then it is all pervading. All pervading means there is no place where he is not. Like, is God here? Yes. He's not only talking through me, he's listening through you all, but he's also here in the chair. He's also in space between us. The space between and me, her, and is pervaded by that infinite. You may not see it, you may not see God, but that consciousness is all pervading. And is there even in space, even beyond space, where space goes on and on, it even goes beyond space. It is there in Mars, it is there in the furthest stars, it is there in heaven, it is there in hell. All the worlds, everything are pervaded by that one. Is that clear? Everybody agrees with that? I think that there is no doubt. Then it is consciousness and bliss. Consciousness means there is a table. Now, even though a table is an expression of God, we say God is in that, but the table doesn't know. Does the table know that it is God or that it is a table? No, table has no idea. Or does the table know it is made out of wood or made out of steel? No, table has no consciousness. But I, a conscious being, can say, okay, this is a table, this is a chair, that is a blackboard, that is a speaker, this is a mic. So even though these are all expressions of God, have existence, but they do not have consciousness. Like this mic is not conscious. If the mic was conscious, it would have said, I'm bored of this talk, would shut itself off. But thankfully, it doesn't do that because it's not conscious. So the mic is not conscious, but I am conscious of the mic. That's why I turn it on and I start speaking. So consciousness, and how, why am I conscious? Because of Om, because of the consciousness. Because my eyes can see the objects, and then the mind and intellect know that this is a flower, this is a tree, this is a bird, this is a dog, this is a cat. But the mind and intellect are also enlivened by that consciousness. If that consciousness is not functioning through me, then I would be lying on the floor, even though Einstein, you know, Einstein, when he died, his body is lying there. You ask that dead body, how much is 2 plus 2? The dead body is not going to talk to you. Why? Because there is no consciousness. So it is the consciousness that is making me aware of the world. And bliss is my nature. I am of the nature of bliss. That's why when the mind is very still in deep meditation, we feel very good, right? You must have experienced when you are in deep meditation and your mind is still and you go inward, you become very joyful. And people who are established in that truth, they remain happy irregardless of what the world does to them. The world may punish them, the world may torture them, the world may hurt them, the world may ignore them. They say, I am happy. I don't need the world to make me happy because I am of the nature of bliss. So bliss is the inner experience of Om. When my mind becomes still and I go inward, then I experience that bliss. That is called Anand. And this bliss is not caused by something else. Like if I get happy by a pizza, for example, or ice cream, then that is called pleasure. That by eating ice cream or pizza, I got a joy. Or by getting an object, like, you know, a person gets a new car, or a man gets new golf clubs, or a woman gets a new dress or new jewelry. So when I get happiness because of an object, that is called happiness or called pleasure. But bliss is the inner experience of joy. Once I have found God's presence within, then I am always happy. So that is called bliss. Is that clear? People understood the difference between bliss and pleasure. Pleasure is from an object or from a person. Like if I marry this person, I'm happy. If I don't marry her, I'm unhappy. Then again, my happiness is caused by an object or by a person. But bliss is that inner experience of joy that we have when we come in presence of God. So that consciousness and bliss is also that one consciousness, right? Is that clear? Then it is formless. Because the moment you say God has a form, you are limiting him. Somebody said, I see God only in Krishna. That's fine. If you worship Krishna and you see God in, that's fine. But don't limit him that he's only in Krishna. Somebody says, I see God in Jesus. God is there only in the church, in Jesus. That's good. You love Jesus. You can see God in Jesus. But then you don't limit him. You don't say only in Jesus. It cannot be in any other. Rest are all. You know what I'm saying? So it is formless. You cannot say that all other forms are false and only one is true. You know, I love that particular form. Buddhist loves Buddha. You know, Christian loves Jesus. Or Hindu loves Krishna or Shiva. And that's okay to love that particular form. But then you don't say that that alone is. Then you are limiting that. You are limiting God and saying, oh, he can only be in the form of Jesus. He cannot be. Then you are limiting him. Then you are saying only that he's so limited. No, he can only be in Mecca. No, he is not only in Mecca. He is everywhere. So if he is everywhere, he has to be formless. God cannot have a form. You may he appears in different forms. He takes different forms. Mother Goddess, Ganpati, Elephant God. All the forms that are taken by that one for us to love. You can love a particular form of God, but God actually is formless. Is that clear to everybody?
So, consciousness is only in living things.
Yes.
And not in inanimate.
Objects. Inanimate have existence. That's why they say Sat, Chit and Anand. So, inanimate objects have Sat. They have existence.
But
God is there in them, but only as existence. That's why they say God is Sat, Chit, Anand, all three. But in a chair, it may be only as Sat. In me, it is Chit, and then Anand is the joy. That's why the three descriptions of God, Sat, Chit, Anand, existence, consciousness, bliss. So in a chair or in a, but in a plant, there is some consciousness. You know, because the plant is aware. That's why they say when you play music, the plants grow very well. Or if you, you know, play loud rock music, you play rock music, plants they don't bloom because they have consciousness. So that's, and then the last one is wonderful. It is wonderful because the moment you experience that joy, oh, it's wonderful. Because when, suppose you see something like those, I don't know if you have gone to Niagara Falls, but the moment you drive up there and you see this, oh, this beautiful falls, it's wonderful. Your mind becomes quiet. Or first time if you see Grand Canyon, you know, you go up to the brim and you look down there and you see these red mountains extending for miles and miles and miles. Wow. You know, you say, wow. So that wow factor, you know, that what is so wonderful, that is even million times multiplied when you experience that consciousness. When you experience God's presence within, what the wow that you had by seeing Grand Canyon or by seeing the Niagara Falls or by, or, you know, if we recently went to the Himalayas, you know, we didn't go to Mount Everest, but when we went to Mount Kailash, we took a little plane from Nepal, from Kathmandu, and the plane took us to all the Himalayas, including Mount Everest. Mount Everest was like so close. It flew very close. And you see the mountain ranges for hundreds of miles. Or if you go to Alaska, there, you know, they in the cruise, they take you on this seaplane. There's a special flight. From your ship, next to your ship, this plane takes off. And then they take you over the North Pole. And for hundreds of miles, all you see is ice, ice, ice. And wow, what a scene. So that wonder that you get. And the interesting point was, we were seeing from the plane this ice. And in the middle of the ice, there was a deer who was jumping around. I said, how did the deer get here? For 30, 40, 50 miles, there is nothing but ice. And who is taking care of that deer? How is the deer surviving? It was amazing. Literally for 100 miles, everything was ice and the deer was jumping and playing. I don't know how it came there, what it was doing, and it seemed very happy. So the point is, this wonder is God, who creates all these wonderful things, who takes care of all of these, even the moss. That's why Guru Nanak in one place, he says, why do you worry about your daily existence? He says that God who takes care of the moss, you know, the moss that grows under the river, who takes care to provide food for that moss? Moss is also getting food. He is. And then you are worried, who's going to provide me with my meals and my... It's a very beautiful, you know, statement that Guru Nanak, you know, one of the gurus of the Sikh, makes, the founder of the Sikh faith, makes that statement that when the moss can be taken care of by him, you are the crown of creation. Human beings, you are the highest. So you don't think he will take care of you? So the point is that instead of worrying too much about, just surrender to him and say, God, you take care of me. And then everything is, so that is wonderful. So these are the we have finished verse number 6. So there are 13 pointers, but they all indicate that God is not outside, he is within. Because everything is God, and so I am also God. You know, that understanding you should have. He is me. You can say, if you say I am God, then it looks like an ego. But if you say God is everything, including me, and he is within and outside me, he is here, he is inside me, he is talking, he is walking, so then I am a divine creature. I am a divine creature, I am God's creation. And in meditation, we experience oneness with God. So that is the idea of these 13 pointers. And you can pick any of these pointers to meditate on. I've listed only 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. But there were 5 more that were covered earlier that I haven't. But they are in the book. So there are 13 pointers. So you can pick anything to meditate. He's the one that is unmanifest. He's the one within me. He's the one that is all-pervading. He's consciousness. He's bliss. He's wonderful. He's without beginning, end, middle. So those pointers you can meditate on. So that is the idea, that the teacher has given us 13 pointers which all indicate that one. That's why the word one is there in the middle, that one alone. Any questions? Any comments?
One of the things that throws me off is that he says the formless is Brahman.
Yeah.
And that the creator is Brahmiji.
Brahmaji.
Brahmaji. So that.
Yeah, well, it's just the terminology. Just you can call it creator and the formless.
Is that, I have the understanding.
It is Brahman. When there is an N, that is formless. When it is N is missing, Brahma, that is the creator.
And that's Brahmaji.
And Brahmaji or Brahma, you can say. Ji means is a form of respect.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what was throwing me off.
Right. They sound very similar. So one, that's why you have to understand it. You know, it's when you remove the N, it becomes the creator, Brahma. And when there is an N, Brahman, that is the formless. So it's just that's the names, just the terminology. But for English, you can say the formless and the creator.
Formless and the creator is the same.
The formless becomes the creator.
Yeah, formless is a big name.
Right, beginning. And then the creator is the?
Yeah.
Is the form, which is a form of Brahma, the creator, which is shown to have 4 heads and, you know, all that. If you Google Brahma, you can see the form of that creator. But it's just
in reality, though, that's just a representation, because really, right. It's all of the conscious creatures are the creator together.
Yes.
Right. That's what you're saying. Okay.
Right. We all create our own world, but we get the energy to create from that Om,
right.
From that one. The energy, like you create your own world. You have your own house, and you have your friends, and you have your family, and your husband and children. You know, so each one of us creates our own world. Like I have my world, he has his world, and you know, each one of us has our own world, which we create, our house, our business, our work, our family, our likes and dislikes, whom I associate with, my friends, the kind of place I live in, whether I live in Bakersfield or I live in San Luis Obispo. Somebody likes the coast, doesn't like the heat, then they move to, you know, San Luis Obispo or Santa Maria. So we create our own world, but we are all that one creator, yes. That's a very good point. Thank you. So we are all creators. Mm-hmm. And the sum total of all the creators is Brahmaji. He's the total creator of this whole universe. Or Brahma, you can call it. But not Brahman. Brahman is the substratum. It is the formless. So you have to distinguish between Brahman and Brahma.
Formless and the creator.
Right, the formless and the creator. Actually, it is that formless alone that is playing all the roles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
OK? is playing all the roles.
He's the creator,
he's the sustainer, he's the destroyer, he's Jesus, he's Buddha.
Force behind.
In fact, later on he will talk about that all gods are that one. He's even the god of wind, the god of the sun. You know, who is the power behind the sun? It is him. Who is the power behind the wind? It is him. Who is the one that creates the rain? You know, they say there is a god of rain in Greek. They call it Zeus. You know, the king of gods in India, we call it Indra, the god of rain. But that also is him. So everything is him. But we can have different names.
You would think in a synonym of formless,
right,
is the principle.
I'm sorry?
Is the principle? Is the energy?
Yeah, all of those, yes.
The abstract?
Right, right.
You cannot see, but it's there.
Right, all of those, yes.
Invisible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all are listed here, you know, the unmanifest, the unthinkable. Yeah, those are all synonyms of that. Those are those 13. But you can add more to that. Yes, sure.
It's the principle behind everything.
Right, the principle behind everything, the invisible, the energy, the support, the substratum, all of those.
Yeah. Some people say source.
Source, yeah.
Source,
yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, these are all names of those, yes. And then next week we will deal with the form. This week, these 2 weeks, we talked about the formless. Next week, we'll talk about the form. Here, they have chosen the form of Shiva, you know, God Shiva, who is the one of the Hindu gods. But for a non-Hindu, for a Christian, you can think Jesus, you know, or you can think Buddha or Guru Nanak or whatever form is, but that form is also him. Why? Because it is very hard to meditate on formless. I'd say I'm thinking about formless, but he's unthinkable. He's unmanifest. I don't know what he looks like. So how can I develop a relationship? So to make it easy for us, they give us the forms. Otherwise, they say sit on the meditate on the formless. I don't know what formless is. How can I meditate? But if you say sit and meditate on Jesus or on Guru Nanak or on Krishna, then it is easy for us, right? Then you can think about Jesus, about his form, and he's on the cross, and you know, all, you know, his love and compassion and kindness and all those things. So it is easier to meditate on a form rather than formless. But form should lead you to the formless. You should not become fanatical. That is what the idea is. So next week we'll talk about the form. Any other questions? Yeah.
Formless is also the spirit, I suppose.
Yeah, you can say the spirit also, right? Consciousness.
Now, I still have difficulty understanding. That's not the beginning, end, or middle. What do you mean by that? It has no beginning.
Means it was there even before time. It was never a time when God was not there. Even never, you cannot say, oh, 10 million years ago or 10 billion years ago, God was. No, God was there even before the concept of years was there. You know, years are something which man has created, right? The 10 billion or 1 million we have created. But in that total formless, there is no concept of time. It is there before time. Even before anything was there, God was there. So they say, who created God? They say, no, God is self-created. Because if somebody created God, then who created that creator? They say, oh, God was not self. Somebody had to create God. Okay, if somebody created God, who created that? Ultimately, you have to come to an uncaused cause. Uncreated creator. They call it uncaused cause. It is the cause of this whole universe, but itself has no cause. That is the idea. Is that clear? Uncaused cause. That, so you understand that is the cause of the whole universe, but there is no one to cause it, no one to create that. So it is there even before anything was. So if there is no universe, if there is nothing, then there is no concept of time, right? Then who is there to measure time? There is nobody. There's no calendars, there's no clocks, there isn't.
So no
earth going around the sun, nothing happening. So where is the time? Time is when the earth goes around the sun one time, it becomes 1 year. Or when it rotates one time, it becomes a day. A day, month, year, these are all concepts because of planets, because of that. But when there is nothing, then where is time? And there is no calendar, there is no hour, there is no second, minute, nothing happening. It is that alone. So beautiful. Just imagine that, you know, that silence. So beautiful. Meditate on that, that, you know, total silence where there is nothing else exists. Huh? Yeah, that's so beautiful. That silence and that peace. Or you can just imagine in space. Suppose you are in space and there is nothing for millions of miles, no planets, no nothing. In that absence is so beautiful. So meditate on that, on peace, on silence and nothingness. That's very nice, that concept. That's why this one that went to Pluto, that what was that spacecraft? What is it called? The one that just went to Pluto. Anyway, whatever its name is. Yeah, so and it's interesting. It goes up to Pluto and we have pictures. But then it says it's going to go beyond Pluto and go for I don't know how many more years, another 10, 15 years. And it's in the space. There is nothing there, not even a planet, not even a star. And it will be traveling in nothingness. And imagine and think about there, you know, where there is no, not even a star or a planet. That silence is so beautiful. So contemplate upon these things. You know, that is how you go from the form to the formless. That alone is everything. You know, so these kind of, that's why space is the closest thing to God. Because space goes on and on forever and it is silent and it is absolute. But this is even beyond space. Even where space does not extend, God is. See, these are not easy books, you know. So it is good to listen. What happens is the more, and this same idea will be repeated many times in this book. So if you get overwhelmed, it's okay. Don't stop coming, because the same idea will be repeated many times. I am that will be repeated at least 15 or 20 or 30 times with different verses. So the point is that when we meditate, you can meditate on the form or you can meditate on the formless. And if you like to meditate on the form, that's fine. Or if you like to meditate on I am that, then who am I? Then I am that formless. Because that formless is the one. When he is one, then everything is that. So I am also that. See, that's why when I was saying, somebody said, how can I be God? You know, then it becomes like I'm egocentric. But when you say God is me, then it becomes easier to understand, right? When God is everything, he's also me.
When I say I'm formless, because I'm body, mind, and intellect, I have no intelligence, I have no body, I have no mind, and no thoughts, I'm formless. I've become formless myself.
True.
So that really makes you feel really amazing how you feel. I mean, you are absolutely like floating.
Yes.
You feel that way.
True.
Just even for a few seconds.
Yes. Yeah, if you say I'm formless. Because I am actually formless consciousness. I am occupying this body. But body is my home. I am not this body. And when your mind becomes still in deep meditation, you even lose body awareness. Like if you're sitting or if you're, you know, in meditation, and if your mind becomes still, like sometimes if the mind becomes still, the breath is coming, but you don't know it. You can't even experience the breath. You know the breath is coming, but it's like far away. It's not me. I am not breathing. The breath, you're not even aware of the breath. You're not even aware of your body, where my hand is, where my leg is. So you lose body awareness. That's meditation. And when you say, I am formless, yeah, that is the best way.
It's a wonderful feeling even for a few seconds.
Right.
It is really when you don't feel nothing, you don't feel your existence, where you are, what you are.
Right. The idea is to still the mind. When the mind becomes still, then the world disappears. The world is only there when I'm awake, when I'm in deep sleep, whether I'm sleeping in the forest or whether I'm sleeping on a bed or whether I'm sleeping on a sidewalk in Bombay in India. In deep sleep, whether a king sleeping in his palace or a person sleeping in the forest on the floor or a man sleeping in a sidewalk in Mumbai, they all have the same experience, right? In deep sleep, I don't know whether I'm sleeping on the bed or on the forest or on the sidewalk. So why? Because I don't have any body identification. But as soon as a person wakes up, he says, oh, I'm in the bed. Other one says, I'm in the forest. Third one says, I'm in the city. So when I wake up, when my body identification starts, then the world starts. When I'm in deep sleep, the world does not exist for me. Right? Is that clear? So that's the same idea. That when the mind becomes still, then the body awareness is gone. Even the world awareness is gone.
We all are part of this consciousness.
Right.
Why are we not aware of it? Why do we have to go to all trouble to meditate to understand?
Because we have the vasanas. Because we have the vasanas. And we think, I think I am this body. Because I have not understood. Actually, you are consciousness. But you think you are this body. And so it is just changing your thought. Once from you say from body, you say I'm formless, then you are there. But you have to constantly remind yourself that I am formless, but I'm occupying this. Does not mean that if I say I'm not this body, does not mean if the body gets sick, I don't take care of it. You know, if I say I'm not this body, but the body has a fever and you have a pneumonia and your fever is 103, you say I'm not this body, then your body will perish. Right? You have to go to the doctor and take antibiotics. So that you have to do. But you have to understand that I am not this body. I am the formless occupying this body. So I take care of this body just as I take care of my car. My car takes me from place to place. You say, I am not the car. But that doesn't mean you stop taking care of the car. Tomorrow the car is running low on oil. You don't say, I'm not the car. No, you go get the oil filled up, you know. Otherwise, your carburetor will burn. Your car will burn up if you run out of oil. So you take care of the car, but you are not the car. So take care of the body, but I am not the body. And when you constantly stay with that thought and you reduce your vasanas. See, your vasanas, your selfish tendencies are the cause of all the problem. Because the mind, why does the mind get agitated? Because I have too many selfish desires. When my, like in the saints, you see, they have no selfish desires. Their only desire is for the benefit of mankind, for spontaneous love. So when I reduce my desires, then slowly when the vasanas get less, then I will experience that. But right now I have too many desires. That's why I'm looking at the world outside for my happiness. I'm not looking within. The moment you start looking within and say, I'm not the body, I'm the formless Brahman, you are there. I think you should take it as a game. You know, this is just a play. It is like a play. You know, like in a play, you know, one person, 1 week he's playing the role of a king, and the next week he might get a different play. He's playing the role of a beggar. But he says, I am the same actor. You know, I am Dilip Kumar, or I am Charlton Heston, or I am Shah Rukh Khan, or I am, you know, who are the current actors are, I don't even know their names. But I am that, but I am playing a role. One time he's playing the role of a king, and the next movie he's playing the role of a beggar, and then the third movie he's playing the role of a murderer, of a criminal. But he remains the same. The roles he's playing vary. So similarly, you say, I am playing this role, what I have been given in this world, but I am not this role. So take this world as a joke. Don't take it too serious. That's the problem. We take it too seriously. You know, oh, this is so important. Nothing is important. This is all a play. The director is sitting up there. And he made this whole thing into a play. And I'm getting caught up in that and thinking it is real. He's joking with me. And I should take it as a joke. So don't take it too seriously. That is when you take the world too seriously, then the world gives you problem. If you take the whole world as a joke, it is happening, it's fine. It's just a play. You know, it's just a drama. It's just a movie. And in the movie, all these characters are there. They are all sitting in this class, but nothing is real because I am that consciousness. So when you do that and take the world lightly, then you'll be happier. And the closer you get to that truth, the more joy you will experience. That's why meditation brings us closer. And you say, why did he do that? I don't know. I am the one who created my vasanas. I am actually consciousness, but I don't think so. So whose fault is it? It's not his fault. It is my fault, right? You are consciousness, but you don't think you are consciousness. So whose fault is it? Is it his fault or your fault? No, the scriptures are telling you, you are that one. But you are saying, I am not that one. I am the miserable, suffering human being. Whose fault is it? The one who thinks he is the sufferable human being or the... So meditation or the scripture is nothing but a change of thinking. You look at the world differently. The world will remain the same, but your vision will change. So that's what they say, change your vision. Drishti badlo to srishti badal jayegi. In Hindi they say, drishti badlo to srishti badal jayegi. Means change your vision and the world will change. The world will change, then the world will not appear the same. If you see everything is that one, then there is no enemy, there is no friend, there is no likes, no dislikes. Everything is that. That's why they say, go beyond likes and dislikes. Go beyond I and mine. See everything as that one. I think it's fun. It's a challenge. Yeah, so just take it as a fun. Let's see whether he wins or you win. Take it as a game, yeah.
The ego seems to be really strong.
Yes.
A, I wonder if there's any place in the scriptures where it talks about that ego. And then secondly, I can get to the point where I'm not thinking about anything, and then I can only hold it for so long, and then I start getting anxious, and then I have to snap back into my ego again. It's like there's something inside that won't let me go.
No, because you have to start enjoying that state. Start enjoying that state, that, oh, it's so wonderful, I am in that silence. Then you won't snap back. And if it comes, it's okay, then you go back. If the ego, see, ego is described everywhere. The whole Bhagavad Gita is full of ego. It talks about ego everywhere. You know, that ego, that ignorant one, you know, the dehi, and everywhere Krishna talks about it. Many places, I'm sure in the Bible also they talk about the ignorant.
The lower man,
yes. And everywhere in the Guru Granth Sahib, everywhere, Buddha, they all talk about it. But in the Gita, it is very clearly described in many places. He mentions it again and again. The ego is the ignorant one, that I think I am this limited being. I am this man or woman. My name is Barbara. I am American. I am white. So these are all upadis. These are all conditionings. These are all conditionings on that consciousness. I am white, I am a female, my name is this, I am a yoga teacher. These are all conditionings or upadis, we call them. But you are beyond all of those. Just as you have a car, you can say my car is a Mercedes or a Rolls Royce or it is a Chevrolet. It is black or white. It is four-cylinder or six-cylinder. It is five-seater or seven-seater. Those are all upadis, conditionings. Actually, car is... one. Car is one name, but now that car can have many conditionings. You know, it can be a Mercedes or a Rolls Royce, it can be a five-seater or a seven-seater, it can be a bus. But that mode of transportation called car is only one and has different conditions. It can be black, white, it can have leather seats or vinyl seats, or, you know, it can be old or new, broken. So car can have many names, can have many forms, have many appearances, but car is one. So similarly, I am one, and these are all my conditionings. I am a female, my name is Barbara, I am a yoga teacher, I am American, I am white. These are all conditionings, but I am consciousness and so is she, everything is that.
I can understand it intellectually.
Yes. Right.
And I think there again, that's another one of these huge concepts that starts to take on meaning within one's own life, I guess.
See, the ego arises when it is I or my. Like now, I am teaching, right? And if I say, I am teaching, you know, I am so great, I know so much, and all these people here are here because they're here to listen to me, then what happens? That becomes an exercise of ego. Then immediately the ego arises, and I say, oh, I am such a... But if I say, I'm so grateful that I, the Lord and the Guru has given me this knowledge, I'm able to share it. It is He, the Lord, talking through me. When that comes, if that is my attitude, I'm not saying that is, but if that is my attitude, then it becomes not an exercise in ego, then I become an instrument or a mouthpiece, either of the Guru, that the Guru is speaking through me or the Lord is speaking. But if I say, I am speaking, then immediately the ego arises. So one has to be very cautious and say, I am an instrument. He is working through me. Like when you're teaching the yoga class, people now, by the way, are really appreciating your class. They're saying it's very good. So maybe that might fatten your ego a little bit. No, but that's what you should say, that it is my guru who taught me yoga, or the Lord who has given me the ability to teach. And when you do that, then your teaching becomes a service of God. But if you think I am the yoga teacher and everybody is here because of me, then that is ego. And that's what it's actually, it's very subtle. It, you don't know when it arises. You know, somebody comes and praises you and immediately you start feeling good. Oh, I'm so good. And it can be anything, like a doctor. You know, you do a good surgery and the patient gets well. And she says, doctor, you saved my life. I was dying. I was bleeding. And then you came and took care of me. The moment you say, I'm a great doctor, then the ego arises. But if you say, I'm like you'd say, I'm an instrument of the Lord, Krishna placed me here. And I was so, I'm so thankful that I was there when you needed me and I could take care of you. So then that be, then you say, I'm a servant of the Lord and I'm an instrument. Or the hand that cut the knife, did the surgery, was, he was the one behind that. Then then it doesn't become ego. So it, the same activity can either become a service or can become ego. In fact, I have a CD talking about, you know, service and, you know, work or service. Actually, I gave a talk at the church, at the, what was that church?
Oh, the Center for Spiritual.
Center for Spiritual Learning. Yeah, we gave a talk. I talked about work and service. So how the work can be made into service. So whether it's work or whether it is service, if you say, I am the doer, then it becomes work, then it's ego. But if you say, the Lord is working through me, then it becomes service. And so that's what, even in the 11th chapter, he says, nimitta matram bhava savya sachit. You become an instrument of mine, Krishna says in the 11th chapter in the Gita, that you are my instrument, work as my instrument. Don't think you are the doer. So you know, these are the conditions. So you constantly have to remind yourself that these are all my conditionings. Whatever name and form are conditioning. So if I have a name or if I have a form, anything that has name and form is conditioning. Because it is formless and nameless. It is formless. So anything that has form, anything, whether it's Jesus or Buddha or Guru Nanak or Krishna, they are all expressions of that one. And who is beyond all of them. It does not mean that Jesus is not God. Jesus is a manifestation of that formless. Krishna is a manifestation. So Krishna is God, but is a manifestation of that formless. That Guru Nanak is, you know, is divine, but a manifestation of that. So that's how you have to understand. You're not belittling. You're not saying Jesus is small or Buddha is small or Guru Nanak or Krishna. They're all divine. They're all that manifestation appearing as that to make it easier for me to love, easier for me to understand. And next week we'll talk more about the form. I'll bring a picture of Shiva, because for those of you who don't know what Shiva looks like, but the idea is that. And then you can, of course, put in that place Jesus. Maybe if somebody wants to bring a picture of Jesus, we can put that also on one chair and put Shiva on the other, if one of you can bring it. That way we can see that all forms are him. You know, we can do that. We'll be talking about Shiva because that's who this teacher was, a devotee of Shiva. The student was a devotee of Shiva, but they're all, they've gone beyond.